So welcome everybody to this sixth episode of the PositivePsychology.com podcast. I'm really excited today. I'm here with Nicole Geschwind. Nicole has, lately been doing really interesting research on positive CBT, which will also be the topic of today's podcast. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Hugo.
Nicole, before we start, maybe you should tell us a bit more about yourself.
Mm-hmm. My name is Nicole Geschwind. I'm a researcher at Maastricht University. And my fascination with positive emotions started when I did my PhD. Because my supervisor back then, Marieke Wichers, she'd received a grant to look at the effects of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. But then not on reduction of worrying or on cognitive processes, but instead on positive emotions.
So Nicole, to get back to your latest research on positive CBT, I think before we continue, I think maybe it's good to highlight the differences between traditional CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy as it is applied, I think in a traditional way, and the new positive version of that.
In positive CBT, first of all, we spend a lot of time to, in a very detailed way, ask about where people would like to be on a scale of 10, the ideal situation to zero, the opposite. So obviously it doesn't have to be the 10. But maybe someone is quite happy with a 7.5 or an 8. And then the therapist will ask a lot of questions like, what will your life look like when you're at the 7.5?
This reminds me a bit of solution-focused therapy.
Yeah, that's the solution. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Okay. So positive CBT has three main components. Those are some of the techniques of CBT, but then use the other way around to examine positive moments, better functioning rather than problem situations.
Cool. So it's exception finding, basically.
Exception finding, yeah.
Yep.
The CBT techniques, then solution-focused brief therapy language. So one uses really solution-focused language also to highlight better moments, to gently steer the client towards discovering those exceptions.
So can you give an example of that?
The third component, which is positive psychology. Positive psychology exercises, for example, to stimulate optimism or gratitude or those kind of concepts. Mm-hmm. So you ask for an example, Hugo?
Because you were talking about language. And of course, I think I have a lot of questions, of course, because I can imagine that for many therapists who have been used to focus on, symptoms and negative emotions and the negative side of human functioning predominantly, it's quite a challenge maybe to, suddenly also address a different view. Because as you said, we reversed some of the exercises, right? Like where you are keeping a diary of your negative experiences, here you're focusing more on positive ones, for instance. So I was wondering the language part, like, because it also is I think the therapist plays an important role here, right?
And then not so much content-wise, because the content is completely with the client, but more in the steering towards the brighter side of things. So every session is opened with the question, what is better since the last time we met?
Beautiful. Yes.
And the main homework is to look for exceptions to problems or moments in which you are just this little tiny bit closer to your goal, and to look at what your thoughts were then, what your behavior was, and how you contributed to this being a better moment. And that can be anything. For example, my colleague invited me over for a coffee.
Cool.
Okay, well, how come?
Yes.
Of course, maybe the colleague was in a good mood, but maybe I'm also just a likable person who invested a lot in a good contact with the colleague previously.
It's nice how this automatically highlights the strength of the client, right? It creates so much room for solutions. If you ask why aren't things worse, right?
That is a good example of one of those questions. So if someone said, well, actually, what is better since the last time we met? Well, nothing. It was a horrible week. And it was a horrible week because, on Tuesday I was feeling really, really down, and I didn't leave the house at all. But then talks about Wednesday doing something with the family. And then that would be exactly one of those questions you could ask. But how did you actually manage to get out of the house on Wednesday?
Exactly. Yeah.
How come it wasn't much worse? And probably the client had a very good reason for feeling down on Tuesday. So, tell me more about this. What has helped you to cope with that?
So what I noticed myself, because I apply a lot of positive psychology techniques, of course, in the therapy with my clients, that you know, without sounding like, spiritual or anything, but the energy in the room is different. You know, there is a different vibe to a conversation when you focus on exceptions to problems, on strength and that kind of stuff. It's more vibrant, I would call it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more,
definitely,
there's a more positive atmosphere, I would say, created by those questions. Was it also something you noticed when working with clients?
Yes, definitely. Because the last study we did was a comparison between traditional CBT and positive CBT within one treatment. And we did it within one treatment, because otherwise we would have needed about 130 participants to be able to find a contrast between those techniques. And by combining it within a person, you can have a look at the different effect both therapy forms have on reducing symptoms, but also on building positivity. So we had this treatment which consisted either of 8 sessions of positive CBT followed by 8 sessions of traditional CBT, mm-hmm. or the other way around, first traditional and then positive CBT. And I was also one of the trial therapists.
Oh, nice.
And sometimes I was, especially, I found it especially difficult to switch back from the positive CBT to the traditional CBT.
Ah, so because when the order was reversed for a client, like when he started with positive and then had to go back to traditional. Yeah,
because the tone is so lighthearted and fun, and in the qualitative interviews, people reported afterwards that they looked forward to the positive CBT sessions, because it was just really it was giving them a boost. It was fun. We were laughing a lot. As a therapist, you ask a lot of competence eliciting questions.
Of course.
So actually questions which invite clients to give themselves a compliment.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And people started giving compliments back to their therapist, and you end up laughing. And maybe sometimes it felt superficially light and not targeting any problem directly, but it nevertheless helped them to take the next steps towards their goal. Mm-hmm. And so then when you switch to the other therapy form, which we presented both parts as like two different sides of the coin. So now we're going to look at the other side of the coin. Now I want you to look at the problem situations which you might still have. People didn't really want to talk about problems that much anymore.
That's fascinating, because that's also one of the things. You know, I read your articles, of course. I love them, by the way.
Thanks.
No, seriously, I think it's. I love the second one, which is still under review. You know, the qualitative study, mm-hmm. Because it provides so much insight in what really goes on with clients. So you interviewed those clients, what they thought about the therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think for me that was really nice, because it came to life. You have this first study which shows all the data, right? Just numbers and progress and that kind of stuff. And then you see the experience of the client. For me, that was very interesting. But I was wondering, you know, because sometimes positive psychology is criticized for like being overly, you know, positive and neglecting the negative side. And I agree with that. I think human experiences, all human experiences should be included. You know, we have this dark side of life and this bright side of life. Do you feel that positive CBT has enough room for the dark side of life as well? Because I can imagine, for instance, if you come to me with depressed, you know, with a lot of complaints, and I start talking immediately about optimism, and so that you do not feel understood, right?
Yeah.
So do you feel that, as you know, in the current form of positive CBT, that there is enough room for that darker side of the human experience?
Well, it's very interesting that you say that, because in the qualitative interview afterwards, we also asked people what they thought initially when they heard, oh, you're going to start with positive CBT.
Mm-hmm.
And people fell into 3 different groups. So one of them was a skeptic. Well, here I am overloaded with all this negativity, and they want to talk about positive stuff.
Yes.
Well, I'm not so sure. And the other group who was carefully optimistic, thinking, well, I'm so negative at the moment, maybe it will actually help me to look for something which is more positive to counter it. And the third group was sort of mocking. They said, well, you know, I've tried that before. I stood in front of the mirror saying, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so good, you can do it. But without believing it,
yeah.
And without doing the inner work, yeah. and really looking for moments in which they were good, or looking for their strengths. It was just an empty shell, which they tried to use and then failed, because it didn't do it for them. And interestingly, afterwards, all of those people said, well, it really helped me. It really helped me a lot. Except for two people who didn't notice a difference between the two trajectories because they were just so busy with other things that they couldn't engage. But all the other ones said it was actually really wonderful, and the therapy gave me a boost. And after a while, you know, it was really difficult in the beginning, and I needed the therapist to stimulate me and guide me through this, because otherwise I would have given up. It's really hard work to keep looking for something positive when that depression is pulling you down and everything seems so bleak. So yes, there was this group which thought like, here am I with all my problems, and they want to talk about positive things. And I think there the important thing is, as a therapist, you don't need to know any details about why it's as heavy for them or what the problem looks like or how the problem came to be. From a positive CBT standpoint, that's not at all necessary. But of course, what is necessary to acknowledge is that someone is having emotional troubles at the moment, and that's allowed to be. But nevertheless, from there on, difficult as it may be, we can start to look for slightly better moments. And even if someone says, well, this really was such a bad week, you could ask, well, what was the worst moment last week? It's a bit of a trick question, because then subsequently you say, oh, well, that must have been really, really bad. But okay, that means the other moments were better, even just this tiny little bit. So tell me more about that. When did you notice that it went a little bit better again? What was different about that? And how maybe did you help to bring that about?
Yeah, it's interesting.
So that's really important, that acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are difficult moments. We don't have to pretend you're feeling good.
No. So what I like about the approach is that what I notice myself in working with clients is that you can spend hours talking about the past, right? You can come up with all kinds of theories that clients have made up, why things are the way they are and so on. And my experience is that you can create a whole book, you know, of all those stories that they've created. But the question is, how do those stories help you to cope with the problems that you have in this very moment, right? How did they help you so far? And what I like about, you know, what you're telling here about positive CBT is that you start with this moment and say, like, where do you want to go to? Mm-hmm. So let's not spend too much time looking, you know, at the past, but also consider the future. Like, where do you want to be, and where, how can we close that gap between now and your desired future state? I think that's a very elegant thing. And it's also hope-inducing in a way, right? It's not getting stuck in something that was there once, but it's like you're creating a pathway.
Yeah. Well, actually, it sounds like you're a born positive CBT psychologist, because one of the questions you just mentioned was also nearly one which a positive CBT therapist would ask, like, how would it help you knowing how your problem would come about? What would be different when you knew? Mm-hmm. So tell me, how would you feel? Okay, you'd feel, I don't know, more relaxed. You could accept it more. Okay, so how else can, what other ways do we have to bring those feelings, that kind of state about?
Beautiful. So what I often do, I compare like the function, I think, of the role of the therapist to a lighthouse and the client to a sailboat or the captain of a sailboat. I think it's not the job of the therapist to pull that boat, you know. It's not that you're a rescue boat. I think it's more like you illuminate, just like, you know, a lighthouse does, the sea, the ocean, where to go. And I think this is also what you do here, right? You empower the client to come up with the answers him or herself. You don't define that future state. Whereas if you're coming from a traditional approach, you say your future state is to be complaint free, right? That's a zero state you're working towards, from -5 to this zero state or whatever, right?
Well, I'm not sure whether every traditional CBT therapist would agree with that, but
maybe not. I'm not an expert on CBT, honestly. So I've worked with mindfulness based therapy mainly, but because I'm really curious about the therapy itself, like, can you give me some more examples of exercises? Is there mindfulness included? Because, you know, you come from a mindfulness background as well. Is there anything related to mindfulness in positive CBT?
Well, I think when, Friederike Banning, she came up with that concept of positive CBT. And when I met her at a conference, she'd written this book, which I really liked, about how to combine those different approaches to have something which uses CBT techniques, but explicitly steers towards building positivity and steps towards your goal instead of looking at those problem situations. And given my background as a positive emotion researcher and looking at resilience, I found that really interesting to compare that to what the usual therapy would do. I forgot a little bit where I was going now.
So the question, the question was like, I was asking about mindfulness because I know.
Oh, yeah, mindfulness. Yes. Thank you.
I apply mindfulness mostly in my own therapy. And I was wondering, like, how many mindfulness components are in positive CBT?
Well, so, okay. Now I know where I was going because I met Friederike. Friederike Banning, and she had written this book about how to combine the different concepts, positive CBT. Traditional CBT techniques, solution-focused language, and positive psychology exercises. And then we decided we want to evaluate that more formally by comparing it to traditional CBT. And so then it was, in a way, a little bit arbitrary which positive psychology exercises would be picked out of the wealth of exercises there is now. So, of course, we looked for concepts which had been well researched so far. So we use the best possible self exercise. We use Seligman's attributional
optimism framework.
Framework, gratitude letters, those kind of things. Mindfulness we more or less intentionally left out because I wasn't sure then whether just one exercise within an 8-session trajectory would be enough to do it. So, on purpose, we left it out. I think, it might have been nice to include it in some way, but currently it's not included.
No, okay. Yeah. So that was my next question, because for me, it's not mutually exclusive. I think you can
do both,
right?
It's not at all. Yeah, but we're thinking about it, and we only had so much room, and we thought, well, given that maybe mindfulness, you need a bit more training to really grasp it, we decided to leave it out for now.
Yeah.
And... you said something interesting before also about how the therapist is the lighthouse who just shines light on or helps the client to shine light on the surroundings. Yes. And I think that really captures the positive CBT concept as well. The therapist is in no way superior, neither in knowledge experience than the client. The client is the one who has all the expertise about what he or she wants, what he or she has tried, what he values. So they're working together, they're co-experts.
Yes.
And the therapist can offer suggestions. So also homework is a suggestion. Would you find it valuable to try out an exercise which has helped other people previously? I can explain it to you if they don't want it, or if you notice that they're somehow reluctant to look at their own role in change because, first my circumstances would have to change. First, I would have to find a job. First, my husband would have to start acting nicer.
And my boss has to move.
Exactly. So then you'd give, you wouldn't try to force them into looking into their own role, but you'd give them observational tasks to look at, okay, which moments do you notice then that nevertheless it's just going a little bit better? And you wouldn't enforce your vision of now, but look, I think it's actually you having a big role in that. You just wouldn't do that. So you invite people to do homework, you give suggestions, but the one constant is always look for better moments and think about what role you played in that. Preferably write it down, but if people didn't write it down, you don't argue with them why they didn't. You say, okay, what have you done for homework today? Did you bring anything in? And if they didn't, well, you must have had a good reason. Tell me more about it. And maybe if you didn't write anything down, you can still think about it now.
Beautiful. So what I like so much about this approach is that you to use the same metaphor, you empower the captain. I think what we have, I think for me, the main goal in therapy is to make clients realize that they're the captain of their boat, and they decide where to go with that boat, what their values are and that kind of stuff. And I find it very refreshing to approach a client as a human being rather than as an ill person, I always feel like when we bury clients with all those labels, we forget that underneath all those labels is a beautiful human being with a lot of potential. And I think we were talking about this before this podcast, we had this, I think, really interesting conversation about how clients often misinterpret the feedback they get from a therapist, right? It's so easy to, even when a therapist suggest something, a client may pick this up as like a direction that he or she should take, right?
Yeah.
But the same applies, I think, to labels that we give to clients. If we say like you're, you know, you suffer from whatever, depression or an eating disorder or borderline personality disorder, I think clients can easily identify with that label and mistake their own identity.
Well, I think especially with personality disorders, because it's even worse because the diagnosis is so bleak. Yeah, it will take years to get rid of those patterns. And that's often the message they get. Huh? So you're sort of pushed into some kind of helplessness. Or
So how do you deal with those labels in positive CBT then? Because personally, honestly, I don't use them with clients. I focus on, you know, of course, I acknowledge the complaints that they have and take that seriously. And I also explain that to them. But I always refrain from, you know, putting a label on them and saying you are this or you are that. You know, I think it's a human being. It's not a diagnosis.
So, of course, in the context of this research, we had a diagnosis and everything because it took place in a traditional treatment institution. And also for the for publishing our research, it was just necessary to know which kind of diagnosis people had. But normally from a positive CBT background, you don't need to know much about the background of problems. You don't need to know diagnosis. Maybe as a second step, if you see the treatment isn't taking off, nothing is happening, well, then you could think of further diagnostic tests to maybe point someone in towards better help. But what I also liked about positive CBT and what you said, you know, the client is the captain of his own boat. I felt it really lightened my burden as a therapist.
Absolutely.
Because what can I do? I'm absolutely powerless to change you. You can change yourself. And maybe if it doesn't work right now, maybe then you have to wait a while until either things get worse and if you get some energy from there or until something else helps. But look at me, I can't do anything here.
No, exactly. I think the way that we often experience as a therapist is when we're starting to pull that boat of the other person, of our client, you know, because that's...
Because we want to help them. So
exactly. And my own experience is part of this is caused by, I think it has to do with ourselves, that we identify so much with our role as a helping professional that we feel if the client lets us down, right, if he or she doesn't progress enough, that we feel we failed, right? So it's like our duty to make this person better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think here it gets really dangerous because then you get like entangled, you know.
And then you start pulling and the client might think, oh, no, but I don't want that. I can't do that.
Yes.
So I liked it much more to be very encouraging, maybe express extreme surprise at little steps and say, wow, I'm impressed sometimes. But we even experimented with like falling off the chair and... because someone had brushed their teeth. yes, honestly, 3 times last week instead of not at all, like she'd done the time before. Oh, wow, 3 times. How did you do that? But I mean, it sounds fake now. It's not, I don't mean it fake, but it was really genuine expression of, wow, I'm impressed.
Oh, of course.
Instead of seeing, you know, it's still not 100%. Yeah, no, obviously not. Look where you came from.
Exactly. And so this is, you always take the context into consideration, of course. For a client who doesn't wake up in the morning or stays in bed all day, you know,
exactly, that was
bed,
the problem
there. That's a huge step, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. And the nice thing was that people reported that after a while they could see that themselves. So there was this one man who was a client in the positive CBT, in both conditions, obviously. But he also talked about, you know, initially I thought, well, I can't do anything. I'm lazy. I'm fat. I just lie in bed all day. I don't even go outside. And then. After a couple of sessions of positive CBT, he said, I started looking at myself in a different way. I said, look where I come from. The fact that I got out of bed, that I walked to the park, I did a 500-meter round. Wow, that's good. I'm getting there. I'm doing something.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is, again, this is the empowering part that I like so much. You know, I'm not sure about you, but for me, one of the most beautiful experiences in therapy is to see people grow, develop, and to see that they take, you know, credits for that, that they own their own progress and that they become proud again of who they are and what they can accomplish. You know, it's a metaphor that I often use also with clients is I say, you know, it's basically like the Statue of David. So we have, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that anecdote. So they once asked Michelangelo, like, how could you ever create this beautiful statue of David? Mm-hmm. And he said, it was pretty simple, actually. There was this huge piece of marble, and the only thing I had to do was chip away the parts that were unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And I see the role as a therapist a bit like similar. I think underneath all the problems that people have is a beautiful image of a human being. And that image is always there, you know, that David, it's there in all of us. But over the years, we have, you know, we've gained so many problematic thoughts and beliefs and you know, maybe even we were exposed to traumatic events that caused all of these, you could say, layers of marble to be added to this beautiful statue. And I think your goal is not to change the client. I think to remove all those pieces of marble and see, you know, what prevents them from being that beautiful statue of David. And I think part of it, of course, is focusing on awareness of negative thinking patterns and so on, right? That's chipping away. For me, that's the value also of increasing awareness of what prevents you from that. I think this mindfulness does it beautifully by mm-hmm. observing negative thoughts, and you know, you decrease their power, so you're removing those layers. But what positive CBT to me does, it sounds like you're strengthening that image of David. So what is underneath?
It's the other way around.
It's the other way around. So you're focusing on it. And what is that image like? Where do you want to go to?
Yeah.
Who is that beautiful person hidden underneath all those layers of marble? And let's see if we can.
And maybe you're melting the layers of marble beautiful. Away from the inside.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So this is a metaphor that came out when you were talking here.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what clients said afterwards also. They referred to the phenomenon which we know as the undoing effect in the context of Barbara Fredrickson's broaden and build theory. So they said once you were in this positive flow, once you really started looking for and enjoying the positive things, the problems just faded into the background. They weren't so big anymore. They didn't bother me so much. Similar quotes like that. And interestingly, this is also what we see in the outcome measures. Negative affect, for example, there was a significantly higher improvement for positive CBT than for traditional CBT in terms of clinically significant change. Mm-hmm. But positive affect wasn't. So the change in negative affect was bigger.
That's interesting, right? Because you would expect maybe to say, because you're focusing so much on positivity, that the positive emotion, the positive affect of people would be, you know, influenced more by the therapy, but this was
So now that you're saying it, I'm also thinking could have to do with a positive affect, a negative affect scale, the PANAS which we use. So the positive affect scale is really a jumble of attention items and relaxation and excitement. So maybe it's not strange that we don't find much change on there because it's just too diverse. So that could be an explanation, but the interesting point that this shows is that by mainly building positivity and doing that in a really structured way, because of course traditional CBT also looks at coping or better functioning sometimes, but not as consistently and structurally. So by consistently being busy with that positivity and not explicitly addressing negative thinking patterns, or never mind, they changed.
It's interesting. It reminds me a lot of all the work that Barbara Fredrickson has been doing on broaden and build theory, right? That whole idea that once we engage in an upward spiral, once we start to notice positivity, once we become aware of the beauty that surrounds us and what goes well, and that we can end up in a spiral that is, you know, creating more of the same, basically.
Yeah, that's also what you could literally see. I mean, maybe you also see that happening in your counseling sessions. But that's what we could see throughout the therapy trajectories. People also changing the way they were sitting after maybe two or three sessions. They sat much straighter, and they sometimes said, "Oh, I ran into this person whom I knew from school." Mm. And she said, "What happened to you? You look like a completely different person." And that was a woman of 55 who had been having troubles since her 20s, not only with depression, but with all kinds of other, like post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety problems, a lot of really traumatic events happening. And she'd had many different types of therapies. But now with the positive CBT, she said, "I'm really changing. I'm looking at who am I. I'm starting to see myself for the first time ever in my life as someone who's worthy and valuable." And people see that.
It's crazy. Because I think the power here is that you don't tell people, but you let them experience what it's like, right? And I think there's nothing more powerful than experiencing things yourself. right? You can convince people, but it's a whole different ballgame.
Or you can have a logical argument about the pros and cons of it, but it might still not touch them as much as
this seeing is also for themselves. So this is also what I dislike so much about trying to convince people, have very limiting beliefs about yourself, that those beliefs are false. I think you can challenge them whatever you want, but that inner voice, that negative inner voice of people is often so strong and so, used to block everything that is against it, that you will have a very difficult job making change, if any change at all, And I think once you start let people experience what it's like, so this is what I noticed with mindfulness trainings, for instance, in the beginning, many people often said, since I've been doing meditation, I notice that I start to think even more and more. It's like my whole mind is filled with thoughts. And I'm like, no, it's not that you're thinking more. It has always been that way, but now you've become aware of it. Yeah. You suddenly start to notice how much you're doing it in the first place. And this process is so valuable because it's not me telling them that they're thinking a lot and they're living inside their head, but they start to notice it. And then I think a gateway is created.
Well, and something similar happens once you start looking for those positive things people say, well, actually, I realize now those positive things have always been there. I have a partner who loves me. I have friends. I have my parents who will always be there for me. Now I see it. I didn't see it before. I was still thinking of when you said about trying to convince people. Hmm. Of course, normally in the traditional CBT, the stance is also the therapist is not trying to convince people, but you're engaging in Socratic dialogue, asking questions.
You're trying to elicit certain challenges,
exactly.
Right?
Hmm. But I think then two things are happening. Maybe one thing is that the client quickly perceives that the therapist wants to convince him. Because the therapist shouldn't really try to convince, right? No, but I think it might come over that way. And then at least in my experience, it more often felt like pulling on two ends of the rope. And I always started to want that the client thinks the more rational thought. And I really had to abstain, refrain from pulling.
Yes, absolutely.
And with the positive CBT therapy form, that struggle wasn't going on, so that made it sort of lighter and easier.
It's also what I like about therapists like acceptance and commitment therapy. You don't do that kind of stuff, I find it's very tiring to try to convince people or to try to elicit some kind of a challenge, because still you're pulling in a way. Even if I'm trying actively to elicit some kind of response or a thinking pattern, I'm manipulating you in a way, right? Because I'm trying to elicit some kind of response here. And I think the freedom that you get when you let go of the struggle and just look at clients and hand them tools, because I think this is what you do, to come back to the lighthouse metaphor. You help them, you guide them in a way into a different pathway by shining a certain light, but you're not saying to them, you're doing this the wrong way, you should do this or that. You just offer it completely.
No, but I think even there you can manipulate in a good way. Like, you're not going to shine the light on all those paths which are likely not to succeed, but you're letting it shine more often over
But that's what the lighthouse does,
the paths which you might think would be beneficial, or the way you ask questions in a way manipulative in the beginning.
Of course, they do. But
inviting to look where people would not have looked before.
Of course, yeah. So that's basically also, I think, that the main difference between mindfulness-based therapy, where you don't do any kind of that stuff at all, and positive CBT. I'm happy that we brought this up, because this is also, I think, very important to consider, of course, because in mindfulness-based therapies, or those third-wave therapies that are really based on this idea that we have to observe thoughts and detach from thoughts, and I think this principle is a bit different, because this is more based on letting go of thought and that kind of stuff. And here you are using some kind of a direction here, right? I'm wondering, wouldn't it be cool to combine the two, first create space with mindfulness, getting rid of those layers of marble, so to speak, right? To get aware of what is preventing that image of David. And at the same time, maybe, or later, just use positive psychology to strengthen the image of David. So it's like the two processes combined in a way. Mm-hmm. Because this is what I do myself in therapy mostly. I start with a lot of awareness, like what is preventing you from being that image of David. And sometimes soon or later, it depends on the client, of course, start with those, exercises that you mentioned, but what would this image look like? Where do you want to go to? What are the aspirations, the values, the strength underneath all those layers? And so what do you think of that? Do you think there is a potential combination possible, like a therapy form or anything between?
Well, I mean, from the research project which we did, mm-hmm. I wouldn't think it's necessary to do that. So you can also start therapy with severely depressed clients. Mm-hmm. And if you explain the concept properly and the reason behind looking for better moments, and you have to spend some time on explaining the rationale, and that we're not only faking it, but we're also actively really looking. Mm. And it's hard work. So then it's not necessary to first create the space. It can work to just selectively look for positive things. Nevertheless, I think it might be valuable to integrate the concept of mindfulness as you go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I think especially for the positive moments, then it becomes more a savoring exercise. And yes.
You can combine those two beautifully. I think savoring and mindfulness, of course, conceptually is pretty close in a way, right? Yeah. It's both present moment focus, yeah. it's both immersed in this moment, right?
Yeah.
So Nicole, I wanted to ask you, like, how was it for the therapist? Because we didn't focus so much on that yet, but I'm wondering, like, can you give some comments on how they felt it was like to give this CBT form, this positive CBT form?
I think it differed because, we did the research project in a traditional setting. Mm. So the people working there had I only had 3 years of experience with traditional CBT, but some of the others 20 years.
Okay.
And the context in which they worked every day was traditional, it's a bit of a strange word, but the standard kind of therapeutic setting where you look at diagnosis and you work with the diagnosis. And so they had a lot more exposure with problem-focused ways of working. And it really is a different way of thinking. So we had the initial 3-day training course. Mm-hmm. And some of the therapists were really struggling in the beginning, just because you look at everything from a different angle. It's a fundamental shift in thinking, rather than think, okay, I'm really worried because mm-hmm. there has not been that much progress yet, and what can we do? You really start looking the other way around. And that's maybe more difficult to learn the more you're embedded in this problem-focused way of working framework. So
aside from the difficulties, which are, of course, understandable, what are also therapists that say, I can see the benefits of this?
Definitely. But I think it took some people longer than others to feel secure and safe enough to try out with those things. Like, I remember the first time I tried out that question, what is better since the last time we met, on someone with whom I was doing CBT for depression. But I'd done the traditional CBT things earlier. And then for the first time I said, what's better since the last time we met? Because I really wasn't sure whether that was a question you could ask someone who is currently in a depressive episode. And he just looked at me and laughed and said, what kind of question is that? What's better? I mean, come on. I think that's the kind of struggle. Not a struggle, but it still felt scary for some people for quite long.
Yeah, of course.
Because then what if the answer is, nothing?
Yes.
Once you're secure enough or you just dare to play around, you easily have a follow-up question for that. Like, nothing. I mean, okay, for example, tell me more about the worst moment. Okay, so that means there's lots of better moments. What was it about those better moments? How did those come about? Or if someone says on a scale of 10 to 0, he was functioning at a 0.
What? But does it happen?
Do people? Well, it does happen, but then you can ask, a 0. So how come it's not a minus 10?
You just move the scale.
Yeah, but obviously the person is still there. The person still managed to come to therapy. The person still has the drive to make things better. Yep. So there is something there. It's not the experience
that
the moment.
You can always mention this, of course. You managed to come here, right?
Yeah. And it's really sometimes it's really about compliment finding, really doing your own best to find something positive, like even being there, or someone who's canceling the appointment for the third time. Well, you called. Well, thank you. That's so attentive of you. Yes. How did you manage to do that? Or what does it say about you that you still just call me?
Wow. So,
okay, but Yeah, I notice I'm diverging a bit from the path, because your question was, how did the therapist experience it? So it was a steep learning curve for the therapists. Mm-hmm. Some felt relatively insecure until the end of the trial, basically. But that was, I think, explainable by the context in which they were working. Nevertheless, others really experienced it as fun and also kept integrating concepts from positive CBT in their current work. Interestingly, also with the therapists who still felt more insecure, also their clients reported enjoying the positive CBT sessions more and learning more from that.
Wow.
And while my own experience was just that there was so much more laughter and lightness of tone. And
I can also imagine it's more motivating for a client to come to a session when it's more...
That's what they said. They said that explicitly. Yeah, okay. It really gave me a boost and I wanted to come there. Well, sometimes with a more problem-focused approach, I felt like, yeah, it's probably good for me, but it was draining. I didn't really feel like going there.
It's funny, when I do trainings in groups and I do like trainings on strength and strength finding, I always have this exercise in which groups are first, you know, group members are, you know, you create separate groups, like groups of three people. One person talks about a weakness, mm-hmm. right? Something that he or she is not good at that drains him or whatever. The other person is the interviewer, just talks about that and questions and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. And one person is the observer, and the observer just notices, you know, the dialogue, the interaction, what's going on. And then they switch. So then they start to talk about strength.
Yeah.
And there's this observer. And then this observer just, you know, reflects on what happened. And it strikes me how people can so easily tell the difference, not only as an observer, but also in role.
Even if you switch the sound off.
The voice changes, the posture changes, everything changes. So I love to use this exercise in groups because it demonstrates, I think, what you're talking about here in the session. I think
it was so fundamentally different. And of course, I'm a researcher. Mm-hmm. Researching those two different components, so I have to be objective.
Of course,
but I think you notice just my experience as a therapist. It really made me so enthusiastic for this positive CBT approach. So that's why it's important that I have co-authors for the scientific publications, to check that we're still objective and objectively reporting the results.
But I think this is what I like so much about your approach. You're not, you know, living in this ivory tower up there and doing your research. I think you're in the field, you know what it's like to work with clients. And I think that's a really helpful combination when it comes to research. I think mm-hmm. when we're doing research, basically only focusing on concepts and models and theories, I think you can easily move away from reality. I think no client is exactly the same. Your clients differ so much.
Yeah.
And you cannot, you know, force a model onto a client. I think this is what...
Well, unless the model is flexible enough to accommodate for that.
Of course, of course. Depends on the model, of course. But at least that's what I learned from combining the two worlds. And I get a lot of... I'm not sure about you, but I get a lot of inspiration from working with clients for my research. You know, the research that I've been doing and still doing is often influenced by feedback that I get from clients or processes that I see during therapy.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And also I think especially the qualitative interview gave a lot of ideas for future research. And I found it really a privilege to have this role as a therapist also. I'm not currently doing clinical work anymore, but I did it for 6 years.
Okay.
And I think it really enriched my understanding of depression in particular. Which is the main topic of my research. And
Nicole.
Can I still say one more thing?
Sure,
because you mentioned this exercise just before about people interviewing each other either about problems or about strengths.
Yes.
Yeah. Weaknesses or strengths.
Yes.
And that reminded me of an exercise I did 2 months ago in a workshop of coaches and career advisors.
Mm.
I let them see a 10-minute excerpt of the film Kevin Home Alone. Or Home Alone.
Home Alone.
You know,
with that
Kevin boy who's...
The first one? Or because there are a lot of them.
Oh, the first one.
Okay, the classic one.
The first one. So you see this really chaotic family preparing to leave for their holiday and everything is going wrong and they'll end up shouting at each other. And But I split the group in half, and I gave them secretly gave them different assignments while watching the film.
Cool.
So half of them had to look for strengths and strengths of the family, and the other one had to look at weaknesses. And then afterwards, they had to rate the functioning of the family on a scale of 10 ideal to 0, the opposite. And that was massively lower. So on average, I think that the group who had to look for strengths, they rated it as 6.5, 7. And the ones who were problem searching, they rated the family as 2.5, 3.
Wow.
So it was a massive difference. And that nicely illustrates how the viewpoint from which you look as a therapist also will determine the picture you have of a client.
What you look for, you will find.
What you look for, you will find. You're looking for problems. You see it as very heavy and impossible to change also. I sometimes noticed when I was reading the intake reports of clients, I felt a sort of secondary hopelessness just reading it. It looked so heavy and so, yes. I don't know, how do you get out of there ever?
No, but this is, I think, also a different starting point, right? If you start both with this idea, we're stuck here. My God, you know, you feel the heaviness of that, right? And just imagine eliciting only this problem talk during a session with a client. What you do is you just make it bigger and bigger, and you increase the hopelessness in a way, because you that's what you focus on.
Yeah.
And not to speak of how clients see themselves, I guess, because suddenly you start to look not only at life through a problem-focused lens, but also at yourself. And this is where it gets really dangerous, I guess.
Yeah.
So, nice. And then, Nicole, before we conclude, I would love to know if there is anything related to positive CBT that you're currently working on. You got any plans or upcoming studies?
Well, we're working on getting the qualitative study published. We still have to find a nice outlet for it. It's now under review.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's not under review anymore, but I can revise. Then Friederike Banning and I are writing a book on positive CBT.
Oh, nice.
The Dutch version will come out in November and most likely will be translated into English as well.
Can we find a protocol for positive CBT in there?
In the book? Yes. Yeah. The whole idea of this book is to have a sort of cookbook approach to positive CBT. So in there, we'll have the positive CBT manual, which we used in the trial, but also a large background section on what is positive CBT, what is the stance of the therapist, what are useful questions to ask. We have clinical case descriptions. We have a manual for the client.
Wow.
And we also have a group positive CBT, which Friederike Banning had been working on together with another person. And So that's in the book. I think it will be a really, really nice guide to use positive CBT because, like I said, it's quite a complex skill to learn. And I think it would help people to just use this cookbook approach, but session by session also specifies what you can do. Everything is a suggestion, of course.
Absolutely.
And I also think either way, even if you don't really use positive CBT, but just do what you're always doing. Maybe the implications of our research is try to play a bit in therapy, try to laugh together, elicit positive emotions, build hope, build strength, build a positive way of looking at yourself and the client looks at him or herself. And the next step, which we're planning now, is to evaluate the group positive CBT manual.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
First of all, only in a small scale trial.
Yes.
Because it's the first time it's evaluated.
Yeah.
But
So because I searched a bit in the database for research on positive CBT, but there is not much, right?
This was the first project.
Exactly.
And I mean it's.
It depends, of course, on how you define it, because there are a lot of influences. But if you strictly positive CBT, you could say this is the first study. Yeah?
Strictly positive CBT is the first study. Yeah, of course, there's positive psychotherapy studies, but then that's only a subpart because it does not use that whole framework of solution-focused language, which I think was really beneficial. And then, of course, you have some very limited research on solution-focused techniques, which I think is really a shame because it seems like a promising technique, but somehow it never had much of a research focus. So,
No, but I think a shift is occurring already. I think we've seen this with third wave therapies. You know, 20 years ago, there was not so much research on ACT and mindfulness. And this is also getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, there's other more positive affect focused therapies out there now. So Barney Dunn, who mentioned previously from Exeter University, he's working on augmented depression therapy, in which he also does like what you mentioned before, like addressing the negative thinking or the barriers to positivity, but also working on savoring and enjoyment and building positivity. So he does that two-step approach.
Nice.
While our therapy, the positive CBT, exclusively focuses on positive moments and better functioning and strengths. Michelle Kresge also has positive affect treatment, for example. So those are all new developments explicitly targeting positive affect.
Wow. Yeah, it helps also that there is this beautiful theory of Broaden and Mill, right? The Broaden and Mill theory, I think it helps to put things also into framework, and you can explain certain findings. I always love that theory. Nicole, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
For sharing everything. We will put a link to your article on the website, and I hope to speak to you soon.